How's everybody doing so far? We all right? Good, 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 good. Hey, I'm glad you could be with us. My name is Sten. If we haven't met, I'm the pastor here. Glad you could be with us today. If you are new, this is maybe your first or second time joining us. Extra special welcome to you. You picked a great time to drop in to Midcurrent. We're in week number four of a series where we're talking about something that I think every single one of us, no matter who we are, wants to display more in our lives. And that thing that we've been talking about is something called integrity. Merriam-Webster defines integrity as a firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic values, which they then summarize with a one-word definition at the end of their definition given there. That one-word summary is this: incorruptibility. Incorruptibility. That's integrity. And I think that it is sorely needed more in humanity today, especially, this is what we've been talking about, especially from Jesus followers. And so it has been the focus of this series over the past couple weeks. It's a series, as you have heard, called Dan the Man. We have been studying the Old Testament book of Daniel to discover how it is that we live our lives with more integrity in the heat of the moment or in any moment that truly matters most. And we're studying the book of Daniel because time and time again, Daniel and his three buddies, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they prove time and time again, over and over, they prove that they are absolutely incorruptible. Despite the threats and despite the temptations and despite the coercion and despite the pressure for them to abandon their morals and to abandon their values and to abandon even the God that they serve. And so we've been taking a close look at their lives to see what it is that we can learn from them. In week one, we suggested the one thing that these guys knew that set them up for living lives of integrity is that they knew that the world can call them whatever it wants, but it could not change who God says that they were. And if we want to live lives of integrity, we have to be convinced of the very same thing. In week two, we talked about the resolve that they showed in the heat of the moment. And we said that the fact that resolve requires you and I setting our hearts on something, setting our hearts on making the right decision long before it is decision time, right? Resolve isn't just produced in a flash at the moment of our testing, right? It's something that we've already decided on long ago that surfaces in the middle of a test. Last week, we talked about tact and how tact matters so much, especially for Jesus followers. Daniel came within inches of his life, but to the one sent to kill him, the Bible says that Daniel gave him a piece of his mind. No, it actually says that Daniel spoke with wisdom and with tact, and it saved his life. And ultimately, the events that follow open the heart of a foreign king to the God that Daniel serves. Okay, it's integrity on display time and time again. And it doesn't just end there, the integrity that we see from these guys. In fact, as we keep reading today, as we keep moving along, I think today we're going to discover the defining characteristic of integrity. That's what today is all about. I think we're going to discover the difference between good intentions with the life that we live and living really with true integrity. You see, if I'm honest with you today, I think so many of us, I think we confuse integrity with just kind of this notion of being, you know, an all-around good person who, for the most part, colors pretty well inside of the, you know, generally accepted societal coloring lines of decency, right? We know how to make kind of the obvious choices in terms of right or wrong. And so we're happy then to live lives of integrity as long as it's not too inconvenient, okay? We make choices that, by and large, most decent people do. We talk a pretty big game about living a life of integrity until integrity demands something of us. And when it does, too many of us fold faster than a, you know, house of cards in a tornado. See, I think that real integrity demonstrates our willingness and our readiness to do one thing in the heat of the moment. And so today, I want us to all discover what that one thing is. And to do so, we are going to turn back to the book of Daniel. And we're going to look at a moment when, quite literally, the temperature begins to rise. Okay, before we get there, I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. If you have not been with us or you've missed out, I want to make sure we're all on the same page here and just catch you up and give you some context on what has taken place so far very quickly. Babylon invaded Jerusalem. They destroyed everything. They took back to Babylon all, you know, things of value, treasure and people back to Babylon, including Daniel and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's how they find themselves in this foreign land. And Babylon was an attractive and a seductive and a godless place to be. Pretty much the exact opposite of everything that Daniel and his friends stood for. And so now not only are they living in this place that is not their home, but they are actually selected to begin training to be in the, you know, in royal service to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And that training included what historians call programmatic indoctrination, kind of breaking these guys down and building them back up the way that they wanted them to think. But Daniel and his friends resist. This is all the stuff that we've been talking about. And their resolve catches the attention of Nebuchadnezzar. And their aptitude even gains his respect. They become trusted servants in his court. In an unrelated scenario, Nebuchadnezzar becomes enraged with the ineptitude of some of his other servants. And he's so angry that he demands that all of his servants be executed, servants that now included Daniel and his friends. And so Daniel, with his life on the line, spoke with the tact that I just mentioned above. And he saves the lives, actually, of all the king's servants. He gains an audience with the king, and he's able to solve the very concern that angered the king to begin with. And so Daniel gains even more respect of the king than he already has. He's promoted to new levels of status within Babylon, and his three buddies are even promoted as well. These guys are constantly going against the grain, against the current, but always finding a way to end up on top. That's where we've been, and that all brings us here to chapter 3. And chapter 3 begins on an interesting note. Nebuchadnezzar, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, he builds a giant statue of pure gold that was 90 feet tall and 9 feet wide. And most believe that it was a statue made in his own image. Okay? Made a 90-foot tall statue of himself. Okay? And here's what happens next, verses 4 through 6. Then a herald shouted, "People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow down to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. And anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." So that's the new law of the land. When the trumpet sounds, wherever you are, bow down in worship to Nebuchadnezzar. As you might guess, as you might suspect, Daniel and his friends, they have no intention to bow down to anyone or anything other than the God of Israel, and they don't. And Nebuchadnezzar's officials notice. And they bring this to Nebuchadnezzar's attention. Daniel is interestingly left out of their report. And so all of a sudden, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego become the sole target of the Babylonian officials. And so one of the top officials tells Nebuchadnezzar, he says, "Hey, you know, there are some of these Jews that you put in charge of some of our affairs here in Babylon. And not only do they not worship our gods, but they also don't bow down in worship to you either, and to the 90-foot tribute that you created for yourself." Okay? And Nebuchadnezzar lost his you-know-what. Okay? I'll go PG version. He lost his mind at this. And so he demands that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought before him immediately. He asks them, verse 14 and 15, he says, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you refuse to serve my gods or to worship the gold statue that I have set up?" He tells them, "I'm going to give you one more chance to bow down and worship the statue I have made when you hear the sound of the musical instruments. But if you refuse, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace." And then what, God? will be able to rescue you from my power. Okay. Now, we're going to see their response in a second here, but before we do, I need to point out that the text here makes no mention that these three men, makes no mention of them stepping aside for an emergency meeting of the minds. It suggests in no way that, you know, they asked for a moment to get on the same page before they responded with a formal statement, right? We aren't even given the impression that they, you know, like prepared their defense statement in the chariot ride on the way over. It doesn't say anything like that. And yet, without missing a beat, here's how they respond. O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to save us. He will rescue us from your power, your majesty. It's bold. It's pretty confident. Remember, they're showing extreme confidence in their God and his ability to save them. Extreme confidence in this God who has been on their side time and time again. They believe deep down inside of them that God has the power to save them. But their confidence in God in this moment here, their confidence in God is not what demonstrates the integrity and the incorruptibility that we see from them. It's something else that demonstrates the integrity that they have. It's evident in five words that they speak following their confidence in God's ability to save them. It's five words that I think separate good intentions from true integrity. Here they are. In verse 18, they say, but even if he doesn't. We're confident that he can. We've seen him do it before. We believe that he can do it again for us. In fact, we really hope that he does. It would be really great if he would come through for us this time like we know he can. But even if he doesn't, even if we're not rescued from the flames, they go on. We want to make it clear to you, your majesty, that we will never serve your gods or worship the gold statue you have set up. Right? There's no amount of discussion, no amount of pressure, no amount of intimidation that would change the fact that they are not going to bow down no matter what. And so here, the question that I began with starts to surface again. What is it then that separates, you know, our good intentions to just, you know, be the people we want to be and stand up for what we want to stand up for? What is it that separates good intentions from true integrity? I think the difference between good intentions and true integrity is our readiness to sacrifice. Right? The truth is, sometimes integrity in the moment, it will hurt, right? Real integrity and real incorruptibility and loyalty to something or to someone will at some point cost us something, right? It will mean at one time or another that we have to lose the battle in order to win the war, as the saying goes. And I think that this is a dilemma that gets the best of even the best of us. Right? I see this in my own life, and I see this in the lives of people around me in everyday life, right? There's something we stand for, there's something that we're committed to, right? There's something that we're all about, but as soon as it makes our life just a little more inconvenient, right? As soon as we experience even kind of the smallest loss or the smallest setback or the smallest bump in the road, or as soon as we have to miss out on something that we would have really liked to be a part of because of the choice to stick to what we set out to do, right? As soon as there's something that we miss out on, we buckle and we act as if we had no choice. What was I supposed to do? I mean, we had no choice. Right? Everyone's kind of in the same boat, right? Everybody would understand, right? It's no big deal, really, right? See, I think it's human nature to want to justify the actions that we take to avoid pain or discomfort or inconvenience or just missing out. When I was in college, I sang in a choir, and we wore black tuxes and bow ties, and we sang big fancy songs in foreign languages. And one summer, we went on a tour through Sweden and through Austria for 10 days. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. And one of the unexpected highlights of the trip for many in our group, it was the drinking age in Europe. It was 18, which most of us were, not 21, which very few of us were. And the majority of my buddies, really good dudes, but they were looking forward to being thousands of miles away from home, on tour in a foreign country, and legally enjoying a beer at the end of the day with their buddies. And we visited some super cool places, downtown Stockholm, beautiful places along, or in the Swedish countryside, and some stunning locations along the Danube River in Austria. And these are just some of the most memorable experiences. And they were the very kind of experiences that I would very much enjoyed, right? To sit back with my buddies at the end of the day and enjoy a cold drink. There was just one problem. This 10-day tour that I was on, it fell right in the middle of a summer that I was working as a counselor at a summer camp, as a Bible camp in Michigan. And every summer, every staff member, no matter their age, signed a contract that said for the duration of that summer, they would not drink alcohol. And this contract, among many very legitimate reasons, was designed in specific response almost to a few unfortunate years way back in the history of the camp when, the summer staff would spend their day off and sometimes make some poor choices around town and giving the camp a bad name in the community. And I know this. I knew this. I had been a part of this camp for a long time. I'd worked at this camp for many summers, and I'd signed that contract every year. And so for the 10 days that I was on tour, while I was far, far away from doing any damage to that community, I had a choice to make, right? Would I enjoy this experience with my buddies when I had the chance? And my buddies reminded me often of all the reasons why I should. It was legal. Okay, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. We are on the other side of the world. No one at the camp would know. None of the other campers would know. Nobody from that community would have any idea. No danger in you making a bad name for yourself or for the camp or for anything that you're concerned about, right? If there was ever a time to make kind of a low-risk exception, this was it. But I decided I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to take advantage of the local laws now working in my favor. And truthfully, it cost me something, right? I sat on the sidelines more than a few times over the course of these 10 days. My buddies gave me a hard time all week long. We even had a waitress in Austria give me a hard time. She could not believe that some 20-year-old American wasn't going to be ordering a beer along with all of his buddies. And so when she came back to the table with huge beer steins for my friends, she brought me back a mini one that I didn't even ask for. And she said, "Here, I figured you needed to have at least something." Okay, now there's a handful of reasons not to show you this picture. Number one, not many pastors show pictures of them holding a beer in their sermons at church. And number two, just look at me. I mean, yow. Okay, I don't want to sound vain here, but I think old age has been good to me. I'm going, yikes. Okay, a lot of reasons not to show you that picture, but I want you to see, I want you to know this is a real deal, right? A real experience I was, facing in the moment. Nobody could understand the choice that I had made. Maybe you don't. Going, what, why do that, Sten? Nobody could understand the choice that I had made. And I made the choice not because I, believed that, going to have a beer, in Stockholm, Sweden meant that I was going to hell. It wasn't because I, was afraid of getting in trouble. It wasn't because I thought someone at the camp would find out or my mom and dad would find out and they would be mad at me. I made the decision I did because I signed a contract that said for the duration of the summer, I wasn't going to let alcohol, legal or not, enter the equation for me. As innocent or not, I wasn't going to let it be a part of my focus, my attention for the summer. And for some reason, my name on that contract, even 5,000 miles on the other side of the world, it mattered to me. And I was willing to miss out because of it. Now, let me be clear here this morning. This you know, little sacrifice of mine here, it was nothing like the one that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were prepared to make. This little dilemma that I was facing is nothing at all. Nothing even close to the one that they were facing. And the truth is, it very well may be nothing compared to the dilemma or the decision that you might be facing, the test that you might be facing in life right now. But I wanted to try to paint some kind of picture of what this looks like, because I'm curious today. I'm curious today about the fires, maybe big ones, about the dilemmas that you might be facing right now in your life. And what's at stake in the midst of them, right? Maybe it's some kind of fire, or maybe it's some kind of test, or some kind of decision, or you know, some kind of dilemma in your marriage. Maybe it's some kind of, you know, test, or some kind of dilemma, or some kind of decision in your family life. Maybe it's in your professional life. Maybe it's in your spiritual life. And I know many of you enough to know that, of course, you have the best of intentions. I know that you want to do what is right. I know you want to make the right decision. I know you want to stand up for you know, what you believe. And I know you want to hold to you know, the values and the morals and the standards that you have. The question is, are you willing to be insulted because of what you believe? Are you willing to be misunderstood because of the values that you hold? Are you willing to, I don't know, lose money or lose a client, or, you know, see a deal fall through in order to, you know, be honest and fair in your business dealings? Are you willing to miss out or to say no in order to do what it is that you have set out for your family to do? Are you willing to follow through on something even if it is going to cost you something? See, friends, I don't think that we capture the attention of the world around us. I don't think we capture the attention of people looking in on who it is that we are and what it is that we do. I don't think we capture the attention of a world around us when we make the decisions that kind of everybody assumed that we would, wouldn't fault us for making, right? We don't capture the attention of the world when we make the decisions that average, kind of everyday, good and decent people make. I think that we capture the attention of the world around us when we make the decision that no one ever expected, that nobody saw coming, the decision that very few people would make if they were in the very same position. And I think that's what true integrity is all about. It's true integrity, not just good intentions, and the difference is our readiness to sacrifice something, to lose out, to miss out. I think it's what true integrity is all about, and I'm praying that people would see more of that in you and in me. Let me pray for us. God, we are grateful for the opportunity that we have to learn from real life experience of people who were in the fire, God, facing the test, right? Experiencing the dilemma. And God, I pray that, you know, as we let this story sink in, I pray that you would help us to see, God, help us to be encouraged, help us to recognize what it is that we need to learn from these lives that we are studying. God, time and time again, despite threats, despite pressure, despite coercion, you know, despite temptation, right, to abandon who they are, to turn their back on what it is that they believe or what it is that they stand for. Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, God, they prove time and time again to be so incorruptible. They prove to be full of so much integrity when it's all on the line. God, I want each and every one of us here in this place. God, I want each and every person who's joining us online somewhere today. God, I want us to be filled with the same type of integrity. That can stand up to the moments that we feel like the walls are closing in when the temperature begins to rise. God, and as more and more of us start to stand firm on what it is that you have called us to, on who it is that you have called us to be, God, I pray that the world around us would pay attention. God, I pray that our lives and our character and our hearts and our integrity would gain the attention of people around us, God, in our sphere of influence every day. I pray that the way we live our lives after you, God, might ultimately capture their attention so that you could capture their heart in a really powerful way. God, help us to see, each of us, the places in our lives where maybe there's an opportunity to stand a little taller, to stand a little firmer on who we are and on who it is you've called us to be. God, remind us that it is because of your son, Jesus, that we can do that, that we have the grace, that we have the forgiveness to be exactly who it is that you've called us to be. We pray this in your name. Amen. We're gonna close this morning with some music, with a song that I'm really excited about. But before we do, I'm curious if any of you are wondering, maybe you know, I'm curious if any of you are wondering exactly what happened. What happened to Shadrach, to Meshach, and Abednego, right? Because they stick to their guns. And they do indeed refuse to bow down. And once again, Nebuchadnezzar is furious with them. And so he sentences them to death in the fiery furnace. Get this, he actually orders that the furnace be turned up 7 times hotter than it normally is. And it's so hot that the soldiers that are enlisted to throw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire, they're actually engulfed by flames. And it's so hot that just the heat from the fire kills those soldiers right on the spot. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they fall into the fire as well. And that's when this story really starts to heat up. Pun intended. Nebuchadnezzar looks on, and eventually he jumps to his feet in astonishment. And he calls out, "Hey, wait a second. Didn't we throw 3 men into that fire?" He calls his guards over. "Didn't we throw 3 men into the fire?" And they confirm, "Yes, sir, your highness, it was 3 men that we threw into the fire." And here, chapter 3, verse 25, Nebuchadnezzar, he responds. He says, "Look, I see 4 men in the fire, walking around in the fire," he says, "unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods." Friends, there were 4 men in the fire that day. And the 4th was not a son of the gods. The 4th was the son of the God, standing there in the fire with Shadrach, with Meshach, and Abednego. And Nebuchadnezzar calls them out of the fire, and they come walking out. And not a hair on their head was singed, not a fiber of their robe was burned. And the Bible says that there was not even a trace, no smell of fire on them. And here's how Nebuchadnezzar responds. He says, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, of Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than to serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore," he says, "I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save in this way. It's almost like too good to be true, right? That, you know, like this happily ever after, you know, ending for them. And I almost hesitate to read the end of the story because I don't want us to think that integrity-filled decisions always end with happily ever after. We did it, right? The truth is, it may not always end that way, but we can still be confident anyway, because there's three scenarios that I really believe result from the fires, from the tests that we face in the world today. Three scenarios. Number one, we'll either be delivered from the fire that we're facing, and the result of that is that our faith is built, maybe for the very first time in our life, or we'll be delivered through the fire, through the test that we're experiencing, and the result is that our faith is refined and strengthened. Or we'll be delivered perhaps by the fire into the hands of God the Father. And the result is that our faith is perfected. So here's the deal, Midcurrent. As we sing this last song here, I want you to be thinking about the one fire that you may be facing in your life right now, the one dilemma, the one test that you're kind of standing face to face with right now. I want you to think about that as we sing, and here's what I want you to know. No matter what it is that you're experiencing, no matter whatever fire it is that's burning hot for you right now, here's what I want you to know. You are not alone. There is now, there always has been, and there always will be another in the fire with you, building, maybe refining, or maybe even perfecting your faith. So right now, I'm gonna actually have you stand as we sing this last song, and I want you to be reminded of the God who is standing next to you. Let's sing.